This podcast is part of the Christian Geek Central Network at ChristianGeekCentral.com.
Strangers and Aliens, Episode 96, interview with comic book artist Tim Baron.
Welcome to the Strangers and Aliens podcast.
Strangers. To boldly say what needs to be said.
Would you be a stranger or an alien? Or would you be a strange alien?
The truth is out there. I am your father's best friend's plumber. Superman.
Wonder Woman.
Heroes. Villains. Captain Picard versus Captain Kirk.
Do you think that there's room in sci-fi for God? The very first thing that God did was that he created something, so we have a creative God.
This is Strangers and Aliens Podcast.
Hello and welcome to Strangers and Aliens, the podcast about sci-fi, fantasy, and the intersection of all that imaginative stuff with Christianity. I'm Ben Avery, and I am one of the three hosts who are usually here with you to talk about this stuff. But I am not joined by Dr. Jace. I'm not joined by Steve today. I'm actually joined by an artist friend of mine, and that is Tim Baron. Tim, hello.
Hello, Ben. Hello, everybody.
How you doing?
Good. Yourself? Good.
I'm doing great. A little tired. It's been a long day, but
yes. Yeah. I had to kind of get pumped up for the show. I was kind of tired, so I drank a little caffeine and rode my skateboard outside for a little bit, and then listened to some Iron Maiden. And so I think I'm good to go.
Nice.
Now.
Sorry. Yeah, I did that exact same thing, except I didn't do the skateboard or the Iron Maiden.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Or the caffeine. So. But yeah, Tim is here to talk about his work as an artist, and he and I have collaborated on a few things, so we'll talk a little bit about that too. But before we get started, I do want to quickly, and Tim, I hope you'll forgive me for doing some housekeeping stuff here before we
start. Not a problem.
But I do want to quickly remind people about the podcast awards. I'm not sure when this episode is going to come out in relation to the beginning of the podcast awards, but they start November 1st and go through the November 15th. And if you go to podcastawards.com, you'll find a place where you can vote for different podcasts. The podcast I specifically want to ask you to vote for is the Sci-Fi Christian. They are in the religion category. And so if you would go to the podcastawards.com, or not the, go to the Podcast Awards website, which is podcastawards.com. You can do that once a day, every day. And they will send you an email to make sure that you're a person who's voting and that kind of thing. But, you know, make sure there's no voter fraud happening. But it'd be appreciated if you would do that for our, I call them our brother podcast. I don't know if that's quite the right term, but I think it sounds good. So I'm going to use it anyway. And they can like it or lump it. But, yeah, the Podcast Awards. Podcastawards.com, November 1st through the 15th of 2013. Sci-fi Christian religion category. Do it. Do it now. Unless it's not the first yet. In that case, do it later. So the second thing I want to remind people about is that November 6th is the deadline to send us your top 10 favorite sci-fi fantasy characters. And that is for our big 100th episode that will be hopefully coming out the same day as our second anniversary, which would be great if we can make the math work. So, yeah. So this episode, I'll be talking with Tim Baron. And Tim, I'm trying to think of how to start this. I need to introduce you to our listeners. Mm-hmm. And so I've been trying to figure out how to describe you and your work. You are an artist. Mm-hmm. You also frequently post pictures of the skateboarding you're doing.
Yeah.
I think kind of, is this?
It's my midlife crisis.
That's what I was just wondering, is trying to recapture your youth.
Yes.
Although, actually, the pictures I'm seeing, you're not doing too bad.
It's fun. Yeah. No. So. I started up a little again, a little bit again when I turned 30, and then thought I was too old for it. And then once I hit 37, in a panic, I ended up getting a skateboard from a buddy of mine, and I've been riding it since, and it's been a lot of fun. So
nice.
Plus, it's exercise. I dread and loathe treadmills and stuff like that, and so skateboarding has been only the probably been the only kind of exercise that I've really ever enjoyed. So it's been awesome. And I've fallen a couple times, but I haven't like hurt myself falling. It's been, you know, a bounce right back up. So I haven't broken my hip or anything like that. So
that's good.
Knock on wood. Yeah.
So I bring that up though, because that is something of the vibe that's kind of skateboarder mentality is a little bit of the vibe that you kind of bring to your artwork, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of out of the box. It's, I guess punk music would also be a way to describe kind of the art that you do. You know, I've seen you do very realistic art and draw realistic people. And I've seen you do traditional comic book type of art, but where I see you really flourish and where I see you really, you can just see your love is in the kind of the strange and the weird and the macabre. And in addition to that, it's, you have a style that's just very, very raw and very sketchy. But then when you get those inks on there, the ink, cause you mostly work in black and white from what I've, from what I've seen.
Yeah.
What I see there is just kind of that, like, it just kind of drenches the page, and it's just these spatters and splatters and
yeah, like textures a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's, so that vibe of just like the punk rock thing or the skateboarder thing where it's just like, I'm doing what's looks good, you know,
Real emo.
Yeah. Yeah. And the technique is there,
you
know, but it's being used, you know, it's like a skateboarder. He's got technique, but then he's just kind of doing flips and stuff he's doing ollies.
Yeah.
Cause that's the word that I know from skateboarding.
So, very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right. I mean, certain skateboarders are known for certain styles and whatnot, just like certain artists are known for their own unique style. So I get where you're going with that.
Yeah. So then the other thing that I want to tell our audience about you before I start actually interviewing you and talking about your work is that I also find you to be a very thoughtful Christian. And to be, I think that's probably the best way to put it is, you know, you think deeply about your Christianity and, you know, and you think deeply about your art and, you know, you want to find ways that your art is expressing, your soul and expressing your faith and, yeah, so that's my description of you, and you can take it or leave it, but that's kind of the introduction I want to give people before jump into some of these questions I have for you.
Yeah, no, that's a great introduction. I appreciate that.
So your first question then that I want to ask you, and I know some of the things that you might answer with, but I don't know what you're actually going to say, and that is what inspires you then as an artist and as a Christian? What do you look for or look to for inspiration?
With inspiration, you can go several different routes. I mean, one big thing is anything that I watched in terms of TV or cartoons when I was little or played with as action figures. I mean, that's one primary means of inspiration for me. But then there's also other artists whose stuff I look at frequently in order to stir up inspiration. And then there's authors. You know, you have the Bible and you have other Christian authors like, you know, your C.S. Lewis's and your G.K. Chestertons. All that stuff crammed together is a big inspiration machine for me. Depending on what my need is in terms of inspiration, it depends on where I go to for that.
So how about this then?
Mm-hmm.
And because I know a lot of your inspiration comes from like you said, C.S. Lewis and G.K. Chesterton. And part of that is because on your website and on your Facebook, you'll post every once in a while portraits that you've done of some of these people, and like your C.S. Lewis portrait. And by the way, some of your art might have been seen by some of our listeners if they go to our website to listen to episodes. So like our Seven Deadly Sins, those Seven Deadly Sins were drawn by Tim.
Mm-hmm.
And or in the one case, almost drawn by you with the sloth one, which is where I took a picture that you had drawn for me a few years ago. And it's the hand holding the sign, and it says, the artist will get to this when he has time. Because nice. I came to you like a week before we needed it. And I was like, well, wait, I have an idea. We can still use Tim Barron artwork, even though he doesn't have time to get to it. So
very good.
Yeah.
Good job.
But yeah, that's something that our listeners may have actually seen, and there's some cool stuff there. But,
yeah.
But then as far as inspiration goes too, I know monsters and especially like classic monsters and just the weird stuff, you know, these bizarre creatures, they also inspire you. So I got to ask, what is it that draws you to draw those? Why do you like drawing monsters and zombies and things that are just kind of macabre and things that are weird or strange?
Yeah, I have always just had a fascination and love for monsters. I remember in kindergarten was a pretty awesome year for me in terms of creativity. That's like He-Man kind of dropped then, and I first discovered the Universal Monsters and pretty much everything, you know, in Star Wars was still big at that point. I think Empire Strikes Back had just, I think that was 79. But anyways, I remember walking into, it was a Belmont store, was the name of the store, with my mom. And walking into the action figure aisle and seeing on the shelves this 3¾-inch Frankenstein action figure put out by this company called Remco. And it was just this perfect little awesome Frankenstein figure. And the background art of the card was just this striking black and white Boris Karloff Frankenstein face. And those things, just that was probably my introduction to like the Universal Monsters. And I remember seeing like previews on TV sometimes for, I think, sometimes late at night or whatever, they'd play some of the Universal monster movies. But it's something called Midnight Theater or something like that. But my parents would never let me watch it or anything. But I always remember seeing the previews for those and thinking, oh, just being so in awe of them and asking my dad about who played the mummy and who played the Wolfman and all that stuff. But yeah, I actually just bought one on eBay a couple months ago. I had this little kit, this art kit called the Mighty Man and Monster Maker. And it was this really cool little kit that had all these little pieces of superheroes, and they were like these flat plates and these monsters. And it had like a head, a torso, and legs. And you could interchange them, and you just put them on this thing and organize them. And you'd have like a piece of paper and a crayon, you'd rub over it, and you'd create your own monsters. All that stuff kind of factors into my love for monsters and superheroes and things like that. And again, just a lot of the toy lines back then were so creative with He-Man and with even some of the junk monster toys that you'd see in the toy aisles. All that stuff kind of made its way, embedded itself into my subconscious, and it's been living there happily ever since.
So what's who or what, and you already know the answer for me for this question, but who or what would be your favorite Universal monster?
That's a tough question.
Because for me, it's the creature from the Black Lagoon, no question.
Yeah, I'm looking at a glow-in-the-dark 3¾-inch creature from the Black Lagoon figure I got right here, and I might have to agree. In terms of pure aesthetics, that design for that character is beautiful, you know? But I think I'd probably have to go with Boris Karloff Frankenstein, just in terms of just purely iconic, like King of the Monsters. I'd probably have to go with Frankenstein if I had to go Universal Studios.
Yeah. If you had to broaden it, where would you go?
That is a tough question.
It might be just too big.
It might be too big. You might have to limit me. Kraken, yeah. Maybe from the Clash of the Titans.
Oh, that was a crazy monster.
Or you know what? Did you ever see that cartoon Inhumanoids when you were a kid?
Yeah.
Decompose, the guy that would hide, or the guy that would grab you and stick you in his ribcage. Probably Decompose would probably be right up there, almost at the top of the list, if not at the very top.
Is that the main big one?
There is three of them. There's okay. Three big bad guys, and Decompose was the guy. He had kind of like a, almost like a skull head, and then he had exposed ribs, and like behind his ribs were organs. Yeah. But he would like take people and stick and hide them in his rib cage, and it would like suck their energy or something from them. But even back then, that was like that cartoon. If you watch some of those on YouTube, they were really scary and really intense. And actually, I remember watching the Dungeons and Dragons cartoon. Everybody thinks, you know, horrible things about Dungeons and Dragons, but that cartoon back in the early 80s was so creative, and just the cast of characters and some of that was pretty scary too. So factor all that stuff in there in terms of the monster inspiration stuff. But
I do remember a friend in school though who would just rant about the Dungeons and Dragons cartoon because it did mm-hmm. not work. They were too powerful. Those characters are too powerful.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're too powerful for a Dungeons & Dragons character. They can do anything, you know? Like, man. There's no limitations on what they could do.
He was being logical with it.
He played the game.
I had never played the game. All I knew was there was toys. There was a toy line, which was awesome. And then there was the cartoon. And, yeah, really cool characters in both of those.
Yeah.
Oh, but you know what? You know what else I have to say in terms of monsters? The Crimson Ghost would be one of my all-time favorites. Crimson. It was from a 1940s or 50s TV serial or something like that. I think that whatever company it was later released it as a film. But then the punk rock band, The Misfits, actually ended up using him as their mascot. That's probably where he's probably most known as. But the Crimson Ghost is one of the creepiest looking like movie villains. I mean, it's a pretty simple disguise or pretty simple character design, but I mean it's just this skull face, but you know, the guy's eyes are exposed and he's obviously wearing a mask, but he also has skull hands and just probably one of the awesomest. I'd probably put him at the top of my list, right above Decompose, Crimson right. Ghost.
So let me ask you this then. So we've talked about all these, you know, monsters that you like and a couple that I like, but how does drawing that dark and scary stuff then, how does that get reflected in, or how does your Christian worldview get reflected in those monsters? Maybe that's a way to put it. As you're drawing these things, and I'm not saying that every picture is going to be like a portrait of the soul of the artist, you know, but, right. When you're doing these creatures and you're coming up with some of these comic graphic novel ideas and that kind of thing, how does this drawing the macabre and drawing the dark and the scary reflect your Christianity?
Mm-hmm. No, that's an awesome question. Yeah, sometimes, like you said, I just feel like drawing a monster. But when it comes to dark and macabre and stuff like that, I've always liked Edgar Allan Poe and just him as a guy he was pretty tormented soul himself. And so I think with any time you use the macabre or sort of dark setting, it provides a backdrop, a perfect backdrop for some sort of a redemptive story to take place. Like in the Julius Destructus book that we worked on. And that's a pretty dark book. I mean, there's an entire realm called the Realm of Endless Monsters, and it's literally just that. It's a realm of nothing but just endless monsters that keep replicating themselves. But in a way, just like Tolkien's Ringwraiths were, you know, metaphors for dark forces and Sauron. Same thing with the Realm of Endless Monsters. I mean, it can be taken somewhat as a, you know, it definitely functions as its own narrative, but there's kind of a metaphor going on there too. So I'd say you don't see redemption, the glory of redemption, and the, like Tolkien called it, the U catastrophe, the sudden turning of events that, that, you know, when things are going completely into darkness and completely downhill and things are looking the absolute darkest, you know, and then you see Gandalf up on a hill, you know, with his white horse, you know, he's arrived just in time, sort of a U catastrophe. The darkness provides the backdrop and it makes the U catastrophe, the turning of events, the redemption, so much brighter and, so much more glorious, I guess. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk real quickly about, Julius Destructus. Mm-hmm. That's a book I worked on with you, sort of, mm-hmm. you know, and that has it's an interesting thing in the way that, you know, I kind of came into it after it was done mm-hmm. or after it was almost done. Mm-hmm. And I was just there to apply some words to what you had drawn but let's talk a little bit about Julius Destructus. It's a graphic novel. It's black mm-hmm. and white. I can't remember how many pages it was. 100.
It was 186.
186 pages.
I think so. Yeah.
It's long. But when you were developing that, what were you wanting to do with that story? Where did it come from?
That book was like probably 4 years in the making. I had just recently gotten back into comics, in like 2003. And, before that I was just kind of in the sort of artistic limbo, desert, just not knowing what I was supposed to be doing with my art and not knowing how faith and art intersect, and just thinking, oh, well, if I'm doing art, then it just has to be something blatantly Christian so that people can see it and understand it. And I was just doing stuff that just wasn't, I was doing some decent, you know, paintings and stuff like that, but it was nothing that, like, I just felt incomplete and, just had a restlessness inside of me. And then, I can't remember what it was, but I just got turned on to comics again. And, I started looking, you know, just kind of revisiting some of the things that really inspired me when I was in high school and when I was in college and the things that made me want to draw. And I just got it in my mind. It's just like, I've got to do a graphic novel. I've got to do a comic. I can do this. I know I can do this, because when I was a freshman in high school, I did this horrible, comic that my friend Dave and I published called The Gortfang. I mean, it's got so much love in it, but it's just so bad. I was like, you know what? I did it then, and my artwork is pretty bad. I'm better now. I can do this. And so it took a long time, and it took, I woke up, I think, one morning in 2005 with the name Julius Destructus kind of, you know, running around in my mind. And from that, I started kind of this character that I ended up making the whole book about. And that thing was, that came in stages. The original, I had originally done like 20 pages of that, and I just set it down literally for like a year or so. And then this little by little, like water filling a bucket, the rest of the story started coming to me, and sort of different, characters that I had created for other purposes, like the Apocalyptonauts you meet in the story, and, Human Kitty, who's one of the Apocalyptonauts. Those are completely unrelated. And I was at a point with the story where I was just like, you know, I'm not sure where this is supposed to go. And I would just kind of lay out all the pages, and then it just made sense to bring these guys in as sort of the good guys. And, I always, my philosophy of the books that we've worked on is usually when the story usually takes on a life of its own and kind of becomes its own thing. And it's almost like it dictates to me what the rest of the story should do. And that's probably just your mind figuring out what makes the most sense and what should happen as you work through it. But, yeah, I mean, it just came a little bit at a time, and then it just took off, and then I knew what the rest of the story needed to be. And I was up till like 2 AM, like almost every night working on it. And, yeah, I lost a lot of sleep over that, but finally got some cranked out. And then I was done with it. I finished all the pages, and it was, you know, I finished that last page when you open the back page and you have the I won't talk about it because I want to ruin it for anybody.
Right.
But and then I just thought, oh my gosh, the artwork is done. Now is the hard part. What do I do? Because I'm not a writer. I don't dialogue and narration just doesn't come naturally to me. I can imagine certain things that they'd be saying and some, but in terms of weaving that into a coherent, you know, thought through the entire story, that's just not something that I'm skilled at. And you and I had worked on a couple projects, and I remember taking the book with me to, I went on a business trip and I just took the book with me thinking, well, I'll work on this at night. And I would do that. I would open it up and I would look through it, and I'd look at the images and I'd try to start writing dialogue, and it's just not happening. And then I the only logical conclusion in my mind was, Lord, I'm going to ask Ben. And so I prayed, and then I asked you, and you were like, sure. And so, yeah. And then you started sending me pieces of the script, and you just started bringing it to life. And it was, blew my mind. You just, you were like the Dr. Frankenstein, injecting the lightning into the monster, you know?
That's true. It's alive. It's alive.
So, yeah. And so once you got the script, then I started, lettering it. And then, you know, my goal was, Fort Wayne Comic Con was going to happen. It was the winter time. You were done with the script and you'd sent it to me, and my goal was to get it done and printed. And like, boy, a month before that Comic Con, I was trying to figure out how to get it printed. And then I ran into somebody I knew at Motor City Comic Con, and they told me about ring printing in your area. And so I went ahead and went with them, checked with them. And I got like 100 of them printed and got them in hand. And it was like when I first beheld that thing in my hand, it was just like, oh man, that 7 years since I started loving comics again, this kind of came to a fruition at that point, holding that bound book in my hands. It was pretty awesome. Felt good.
Yeah, and Julius Estructus is the story of a little lizard boy who becomes the most evil, destructive force in the universe, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the trials and tribulations of what happens when you're the most destructive force in the universe. And yeah, it's and you know, you sent me those pages to ask me if I would be willing. I mean, as soon as I was looking at what I was looking at, I was like, well, yeah, because this is awesome. This is cool. And it comes down to like that sensibility that you have, that artistic sensibility that you have that's unique. I don't know of anyone who does things the way that you do as far as just art style and that kind of thing goes. And well, so thanks. Julius Estructus is very different. I mean, it's a very unique looking thing. The follow-up, I don't want to talk too much about the follow-up to Julius Estructus because I'd like to save that for December, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But the follow-up being, 'twas the night before Krampus.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a Christmas story, unlike mm-hmm. any Christmas story I'd ever seen. And so, I got to, you know, get the artwork, and the artwork came into me, and I got to, you know, do the scripting and send it back to you. And, mm-hmm. yeah. So, and then now we're working on another project together that, mm-hmm. you know, if that happens the way we're thinking, it could be some really interesting kind of things like that. But, we'll talk more about that later at a later mm-hmm. date.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So you've talked a little bit about just your process of getting Julius Estructus all out of your brain and mm-hmm. onto the page. And it's something that, it was a long time coming, and I have a book on my shelf called The Great and Terrible Dream.
Oh, yes.
Which is a book of sketches and stuff. There's destructive stuff in here
mm-hmm.
from 2009. Yeah.
That was before I didn't have Julius done then, but my goal, I was a big fan, I am a big fan of an artist by the name of Sam Heady, and he had done a little compendium book just filled with sketches and stuff, and it was called Goulash, and it was just filled with just all this and I love his artwork. It was just filled with all these random drawings of monsters and just random stuff he had done, and it was just that size, and I just loved that, and I was like, I'm gonna do that. And then I I decided one day that I'm going to make that. I'm going to make a little book like that. And so that was my first endeavor into printing, just a little print on demand project. And it finally gave me a chance to publish some of the sequential art that I had done, like for my senior project in college, which was, 9 years prior to that, that had never really seen the light of day in anything. So that gave me a chance to put that into print, because it was probably three of the most elaborate, insane, cross-hatchy, mind-numbing pages I've ever done in my life. And I've never done anything like that since. I don't even ink like that anymore, because it was so tedious. But it gave me a chance to put that out there, and if anybody wants to check it out, there it is.
Yeah, so the process there, you talk a little bit about that. So now I want to kind of get into some more of the maybe more philosophical ideas there. But do you have any advice for artists who are maybe they're new artists, maybe they're young artists, or maybe they're just people who are thinking about doing something and haven't had a chance to do it yet, or haven't tried to do it yet, or maybe they're skilled. I don't know. But do you have any advice that you would say you'd give to artists who are considering, starting that journey to create a Frankenstein monster?
Yeah, I would say to any artist, just have a good handle on your basic drawing skills. That sounds like really simple, but just when it comes to, anatomy and just a basic sense of like form and how things are, physically composed and being able to draw what you see around you. Drawing from life is it's nothing. I still don't really enjoy doing that, but that was probably some of the best training I got in college. It was just drawing, whether it was, just sitting down on a bench at school and drawing the corner of a hallway or something like that, or a hallway and people coming to and fro. So just basic drawing skills, I'd say, is super duper important. And it's good. I mean, if you're big into comics and that's what you want to do, learn from comics everything that you can. And I'd say even copy those artists that you really, really like. I've done that a lot. In fact, in the past 10 years, I've probably kind of latched on to about three or four artists whose work I really, really admire, and trying to figure out what I like about that and kind of run that through my own artistic DNA. And it's somehow incorporate that into my style and what it is that they do that I like, and kind of emulate that in a sense. And somehow when you spit that back out, it ends up, getting into your own artistic DNA and getting into your own style. I don't know how all that works, but like a couple artists for me, like Frank Miller, I love Frank Miller, Mike Mignola, and probably the biggest artistic influence has been Doug Tenapel. I think I'm saying his name right.
Yeah.
But his stuff, oh my goodness, I never even heard of him until you told me to check out, on a whim, you told me to check out Creature Tech, and I did. And that was like the first time that I ever saw art and faith come together in comic book a way that was just awesome and not like cheesy, really good stuff. So I'd say, get basic drawing skills, find some artists whose work that you really, really like, and figure out what you like about that. Even, copy their work. And I'd say have a good handle on penciling as well as inking. Some people are really good at one or the other. My pencils are, as you've said, I mean, my pencils are pretty rough. And a lot of the harder work, that's where a lot of the, where I'm figuring things out. The fun stuff comes when I'm inking and things finish themselves up and that. So, and I would just say talk and ask people, if you're at a convention or even if you're still going to art school, I'd say ask your teacher questions, ask how they do certain things. I still do that. In fact, just the other week, there's two guys that are local whose work just blows my mind. Kanan White and Aaron Manier. Kanan is actually doing a book called Uber for Avatar Press. And Aaron Manier is doing a book called Black Rose. And both of those guys are two of the best artists I've ever met. And so I've asked them several questions of just how they, you know, how they use reference and how much they use reference and things like that. I was just asking them the other week. So just ask questions, talk to people whose work you like. And if you're looking to get into comics, probably don't expect to get rich real quick.
I'd say don't expect to get rich ever.
Okay, I don't want to be that grim, but
no.
But yeah, most people who do comics do it because they love it, and if something takes off, and then that's great. You know, be happy about that. But ultimately, do it because you love it, and hopefully, you can make a little money doing it, or at least, you know, some way make some money off of being an artist in a vocation of graphic designer or whatever, and still do comics on the side.
What's your day job?
My day job, I am a graphic designer. I actually work for an insurance company of all places, which is, if somebody would have told me in high school that I would be working for an insurance company for 13 years, I don't know what I would have done. But it's turned out great because I've learned my skills as a graphic designer, which I've been able to, you know, incorporate into my comics. I mean, with Julius Destructus and Krampus, I've laid out every one of those books and designed the interior and the exterior of the book. I've done the whole book design. So, and it's just been a great stable way to, you know, have a paycheck that comes in and be able to provide for the family and still be able to do fun, cool stuff on the side, which has been awesome. So I'm real thankful for that. So it's been great. So having a backup plan, having a quote real job to pay the bills is definitely helpful too. So hopefully that answered your question. I rambled a lot. Hopefully it was all coherent.
Your job for the insurance company, that's how we met.
That is how we met.
Because you were working with a friend from college.
Yep.
That I went to college with. And
yeah, and he just mentioned you on a whim. He was like, yeah, my friend Ben from college used to be into comics, Christian comics. He used to do Christian comics. And I was like, what was your friend's name? And he told me, and within, you know, a minute or so, I had found you on the internet and found Community Comics. And then I think I emailed you a link to my website. And so that's been awesome. It's been great.
Okay. So I guess I'm going to kind of, shift the question, you know, right or left. I don't know which direction it would be, but, what advice do you have? And you kind of maybe covered this a little bit already, but what advice do you have for artists or creators who are Christians? And just, and along with that, you know, how is art a part of your life as a Christian? And I'm not just talking about like, okay, so how can you draw a monster when you're a Christian? What is the worldview of philosophy behind that? But as a Christian who is also an artist, how does your art become a part of your Christian life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's been a long journey for me that I'm still trying to figure that out and balance that out. But in terms of, just basic, advice to a Christian who may be an artist or maybe a creator writer who wants to, wants to be involved with comics or wants to be involved in art, whether it be, you know, fine art or graphic design or comics or whatever it is. I would say two things. I would say one, know your skill, learn your skill, learn what you're doing, know it inside and out. Don't ever stop growing. So know your skill, and then the second is do good work. Do your best. Do great stuff. So know your skill and do good work. I heard somebody at a conference that I went to who was a Christian, and those are the two things he said, and those have stuck in my mind, and that's so true. Hold to your convictions and in terms of faith and in art and how that works together. I've been trying to figure that out for the longest time, but a couple things, two books I would recommend to anybody who's involved in any Christian who's involved in the arts. The first book is Art in the Bible by Francis Schaeffer.
Yes.
That is an awesome, foundation just to set your philosophy, down of art and faith. So that's an awesome ground zero philosophy of art and the Christian. The second book is a book by his son, which it's an older book, and I think he's since kind of gone off the deep end theologically, but his son, Frankie Schaefer, did a book called Addicted to Mediocrity. And that book opened that just blew my mind, because that was just like, oh my gosh, this is everything I can't stand about walking into a Christian bookstore. In terms of art, and he just talked about how, you know, so much, you know, when you look at painters and artists in the past, I mean, it was the church that was commissioning these beautiful works of art, and so much of the themes of the stuff that you see in art history books, you know, have an overt theological, subject matter. Same with music, you know, Bach, and you got these extremely gifted, talented Christian guys who were just putting out beautiful music and beautiful art, and the bar was so high, you know. But now you like walk into a Christian bookstore and you go past the you know, the rack with the toys, and you have like, you know, you have like Christian gum, and you have like Christian whistles and like Christian candy, and just this, and you know, and a lot of people think that, well, if you're doing a painting, you know, it has to be, you know, an overt picture of Jesus, and there's nothing wrong with that. But, one thing that Francis Schaeffer mentions in his book, Art in the Bible, is he talks about Bezalel and Oholiab in the Old Testament when they're building the temple. And they had these two guys, and it's actually Bezalel and Oholiab. And if I remember correctly, they're the first people mentioned in the Bible that were, you know, quote, filled with the Holy Spirit, that God specifically gifted them. You know, to make art for his tabernacle. I think I said temple before. I'm pretty sure it was the tabernacle. One of the things he had to make was, I forget what it was for, but it was blue pomegranates. Well, in real life, there's no such thing as blue pomegranates, to the best of my knowledge. And I think Francis Schaeffer talks about that. And so, just the pressure for Christians to fit into a certain kind of box, I would say don't feel that. You know, with Bezalel and Oholiab, God gifted them as artists, and they had a specific role. And you know, they did awesome artwork, and it wasn't necessarily something that was portrayed in nature. Hopefully, this is making sense. But yeah, basically, God said, "Be creative," and that's a good thing. So he told them to create things that weren't necessarily found in nature. That's the point I'm getting at. So I rambled a little bit incoherently there. So what was your original question?
Advice for artists who are Christians.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And you were saying don't feel like you have to be locked in that box. And
yes. Yes. And don't feel like you have to stay within that, and don't feel, that you have to be boxed in. I have been trying to figure this out for the longest time. Just the balance there of what my passions as an artist, how that does or doesn't relate to my experience with church, and what it should be, what it shouldn't be, and where that intersects and where it doesn't. But you know what? The place where I found those things intersecting was guys like Tolkien and guys like C.S. Lewis and guys like G.K. Chesterton. Like right there is where I saw those things, where I saw art and faith kind of kiss for the first time. Especially, there's a philosopher named Peter Kraft, and listening to him, and he talks in depth about C.S. Lewis and Chesterton and Tolkien in a lot of his lectures. And in 2006, I was just binging on Peter Kraft lectures because he talked so much about, and one of the things that kept coming up over and over again is C.S. Lewis's, whole argument, for God's existence from desire, that, we have an innate desire, you know, within us that, you know, nothing in this world can fill. But yet certain things in this world have, you know, awakened that desire, whether it be love or romance or, in my case, you know, action figures and comics or a sunset or whatever it is, this, and he called it Sehnsucht was the name, this deep, mysterious longing. And that's been like him explaining that to me has really helped, help me understand the art process, that God uses art. I've heard it talked about that art and story, so often is, it's not overtly evangelical. What it is a lot of times, a good story written by a Christian, that's, you know, put out there in the world for common consumption can oftentimes be like a tilling of the soil of the heart, you know, preparing that the listener's heart for, you know, the seed of the gospel to be planted and, you know, and sometimes even awakening that desire within that person for eternity in some way or another. Does that all make sense?
Yeah, it does. And that's something I actually, when I was scripting Julius Destructus, that I was seeing in Julius Destructus. I mean, that was kind of seeing you put into action what you're just talking about right now. You know, it being about the redemption or not of this little creature who starts out just as a little prideful, little dude, you know, and then, being given the keys to the kingdom, so to speak, to have this power. And what does he do with that power? And, and then facing the consequences for what he did with that power. And so, yeah, I really, with Julius Destructus, I see in that exactly what you're talking about here with, you know, kind of tilling the soil. And, it's cool because a friend of mine and yours, a common friend of ours, he was someone that when he read it, he was actually someone I was thinking of as I was reading through and looking through and scripting it and thinking, this guy's going to see it because he knows Tim and he knows me. And, as I was working on the script there, I'm thinking about him and I'm praying about him and I'm thinking, I hope he reads this and I hope he likes this. And he did. He read it and he liked it. So,
yeah, that's awesome.
I don't know what happened in his heart, so to speak. But that's a story that he wrote to me and he wrote to you, I believe too, but I know he wrote to me and he said that it touched him. And if nothing else, that's something that came out of that story. But, I believe that all story has power and it's just, what are you using the power for when you're creating it?
Yeah, and I've heard that, let's see, I think it was a lecture Peter Kreeft was giving to, I think it was Hollywood, it was some writers. It was some
Act One Writing for Hollywood.
I think that's what it was.
I went to that writing program and you sent me that specific one and said, listen to that one. I'm like, dude, I went to this program that he's speaking at.
Oh, nice.
I wish I would have gone to it later. And been able to hear him.
Yeah. Yeah. And he talks about in that, you probably remember, he talks about, you know, Christ is in your work. And like, to me, I'm just like, you know, that's true. You know, and that's, so in a way, you know, if the Holy Spirit is in you, then the person who reads your work, whether they're a Christian or not, they're coming into contact with God. And, you know, whether it be in a very indirect way, you know, Jesus is in there somewhere and he can interact with the person, you know, somehow mysteriously. I don't know, but he said something to that nature that Christ is in there. And, that really made an impact on me and how I thought about storytelling.
All right. Well, as we wind this interview down, like I said at the beginning of the podcast, we're coming up on our 100th episode. We're coming up with the 100 favorite, greatest characters of all sci-fi and fantasy. And so I'm going to put you on the spot here, Tim. I want to know, what are your 100 greatest... Oh, wait, that's probably too much on the spot. let's go with just five. Who are your five, your top five favorite characters in sci-fi or fantasy? And that can go anywhere. Comics, books, movies, concept albums. I don't care. And I'm actually going to be typing them when you say them, because I'm going to include them in our count as we're getting feedback from listeners about favorite characters. So I'm going to include yours in our count and in our scorekeeping to make that list.
Okay. Boy, that's a tough one. I'll probably draw from my primarily from my comic book background here, but I'd probably have to say Green Goblin.
Goblin.
Yeah, I always just love the Green Goblin. Yeah, ever since Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, seeing Green Goblin on that. Love that character design, at least the original. I care less about the movie Green Goblin or some of the later incarnations of him, but the original Norman Osborn Green Goblin, awesome. And you know, drawn by Steve Ditko, that sort of thing. Love that. Second, let's see, Dark Knight Returns Batman.
Okay.
Third, The Flaming Carrot.
Okay. Hang on. Flaming Carrot. All right. Fourth,
probably Boba Fett.
Boba Fett. All right. All right.
And then fifth, oh man. Pressure's strong on this one.
Okay. I'm not going to have to edit.
Thing.
What?
Swamp Thing?
Yes.
Yep. Bernie Wrightson, Swamp Thing.
Swamp Thing. I have a feeling that Dr. Jason and Steve are not going to have Swamp Thing on their list, but your vote just now might allow Swamp Thing to be retained in the top 100, because I don't think anyone else would put him on their list, but I love Swamp Thing.
I do too.
Yep. I like Man Thing's stories better, but I like Swamp Thing, the character, better, if that makes any sense. But
yeah, and there's a lot of those peripheral Silver Age DC characters like Metamorpho that almost, you know, I'd almost put those guys on the list, but they're not quite up there. But a lot of those, there's some awesome characters out there.
Okay. All right. Well, Tim, how can people find you online? If they're looking to maybe order a copy of, say, Julius Destructus, which I do recommend for the artwork, if nothing else. I've always said that any project I work on as a comic book writer, I'm very lucky because I can brag about the project and be completely humble because I'm bragging about the artist. I've been blessed to work with some amazing artists, and Tim is definitely one of them. So if someone were to say, want to order Julius Destructus or Night Before Krampus, or is Great and Terrible Dream still available?
That is actually out of print.
Okay.
I don't have many more of those left. But
where can they find you and your work?
Sure.
And your books.
Easiest way is just timbaron.com, TimBaron.com. From there, if you just go to the store, the link to my store, you'll get to the store where Krampus and Julius and anything else I've got up there is there. At Twitter, I just started doing Twitter more often. I believe that's at TimBaronArt. Is that how you say Twitter?
I've
handles?
Heard people say, don't say the at part.
Okay.
Because it's just assumed, but at the same time, it's always there. So
okay.
I could go either way. It doesn't matter.
All right. Well, TimBaronArt on Twitter. And you can get to my update my blog almost every day. I just got a new Tumblr blog a few weeks ago, and I've been updating that thing like mad because I accidentally demolished my old blogger site and accidentally deleted like 90% of the images on there. So I was like, okay, well, time to finally invest in that Tumblr site. So, if you just click on the blog link at timbaron.com, you'll get to my blog, and you can follow me on the Tumblr site and see all the stuff that I'm posting, new and old, on there as well.
All right. Excellent.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much, Tim, for
my pleasure.
For being with us and talking with us and kind of pontificating with us. And I just do listeners – definitely check out timbaron.com. Definitely check out his work. It's good stuff. I highly recommend it. And I think that you'll enjoy it. Beyond that, I would like to ask people, we don't talk about this very often. I realize we need to ask about this more often. If you can, if you like what you're listening to, if you like Strangers and Aliens, please go to iTunes and leave us a review, especially a review with, you know, multiple stars. You can't give more than 5, but if you tried, I'd be very happy if you tried. That helps people to find our podcast and helps us to expand the conversation even further. So we do appreciate you listening. I want to thank you once again for allowing me and allowing also Tim to invade your ear space for a while. And Tim, you have any last words, or shall I shut things down?
Sure. Well, first of all, thanks for having me. Second, would you be interested in doing a giveaway, Ben? Like maybe a free copy of the Julius Destructus graphic novel we did?
Yeah, sure. I already have one. But well, I'll have another. Actually, you already gave me like 20, 25 copies.
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe for a listener out there.
Yeah, that sounds actually like a great idea. I wish I had thought of it. Yeah, that sounds great. I'm trying to think of something that we want listeners to do, and we could do, yes, here's what we can do. Anyone who sends us a list of characters for our 100th episode,
there you go.
Anyone who sends us a list of characters for our episode, they will be eligible for a drawing, and we will draw their name at the end of our 100th episode and give away a copy of Julius Destructus. Yeah.
Hey, that sounds, yeah, and hey, how about this? How about if I sign it with an original sketch?
That sounds cool.
Icing on the cake, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. All so, right. Okay, yeah, so here's what we'll do. We'll do the drawing, and whoever wins will send me their address, and I'll get it to you so you can get them a copy of Julius Destructus.
Yep.
The Life and Times of Julius Destructus.
Yep.
Okay, yeah, that's cool. Thanks, Tim.
Awesome, yeah.
All right. Yeah, great idea. Wish I had thought of it. Maybe I'll take credit for it. Maybe I'll edit this episode so I can – it sounds like it was my idea.
Sure.
all right. Well, do you have anything else to add then?
No, I'm good. Thanks again for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah. And your website, again, is just timbaron.com.
.com, yep.
Yeah. And so, yeah, anyone who wants to check anything out, just go to timbaron.com. Also, you can go to strangersandaliens.com. We'll have it in the show notes. And, you know, strangersandaliens.com is also where you can contact us. You can subscribe to our podcast and all that fun stuff. So, all right. Well, with all that said, then, Godspeed, everyone. You've been listening to the Strangers and Aliens podcast, hosted by Ben Avery, Steve MacDonald, and Dr. Jace O'Neill. Our music was composed and mixed by Tim Leffel. Please join in the conversation by visiting our website, strangersandaliens.com, where you will find show notes, articles, reviews, and more. You can also email us directly at podcast@strangersandaliens.com, or like us on Facebook at facebook.com/strangers, or you can leave us a voicemail on the Strangers and Aliens hotline. Just call 1-804-37-ALIEN and leave your message. And once again, thanks for listening.